Sarah, do you have a favorite photograph from At the Hour of Our Death?
Yes, actually, it's called Suicide with Gun, Female, 60 Years Old. It's also the first one that's on my website when you go to the project. It's actually a portion of a mattress, and it's bisected down the middle. There's a stain. There's stains all over it, but there's particularly some red splotches, and the background, the mattress has now turned yellow from the stain of urine. And the reason it's my favorite is it was the first photograph that I made for the series. Initially with this project, I was intending to photograph rooms before and after they had been cleaned. I've been working with a crime scene cleanup crew or crime scene and trauma cleanup crew. And I initially thought that I wanted to photograph the rooms, and that access proved very difficult. And so when they showed me these small segments or swatches that they removed from the scene and brought back to a warehouse before they went to an autoclave, I was completely fascinated by this smaller remnant or fragment that had been removed from the larger hole. And the mattress was the first piece I saw, and immediately was drawn to the texture and the random patterning that had been left by the deceased on the mattress. Mm-hmm. And so that happens to be my favorite one.
It's beautiful, as are all your photographs, but they're also, well, I guess it's disturbing that they're beautiful. They're mm-hmm. beautiful and dark at the same time. Is that what you're aiming to do?
I think with this series, which is the same with a lot of my series, I'm very interested in getting under your skin a little bit, not necessarily shocking you or making you sick to your stomach or anything like that, but having work resonate with you. I see a lot of photography. You know, I'm always researching, looking at what other photographers are doing, and it's pretty rare that I find anything that I'm drawn to or that leaves me lingering or wondering about it or makes me want to know more. And so that's something that I definitely want my photographs to be, is to raise questions in your mind, to make you curious, to make you possibly step back for a second, to maybe even give you or create an emotion in you, whether it be horror or fascination or curiosity or just quiet contemplation.
It makes me think of that design principle. I like it. What is it? Your mm-hmm. photos draw us in with their beauty, and then they show us something that we don't necessarily want to see.
Exactly. A lot of times, well, the few times that I have exhibited the work, if I can choose to, I don't often put the text or the title next to the piece. I leave it up so it's I just have the photograph up, so it's a little bit ambiguous as to what it is, drawing you in, the saturated color, the abstractness. I enjoy being able to print large scale. I don't always get the opportunity, depending on the space, but ideally the prints are 30 by 40 inches. So the fragment or swatch that I'm photographing is very much enlarged from its actual size.
So you're not just looking at you're not just looking at a photograph of a bloodstain. It's a gigantic and large
yes.
bloodstain.
Yes, it's about the size of me. I'm just over 5 feet tall, so it's close to my size and scale. And most of the material is quite small, a throw pillow or a portion of a mattress, like I said before, or a bed sheet. And then I'm using a macro lens and going in really tight and detailed on just a small section of that actual fragment and further abstracting it removing it from the whole.
There's a backstory to this project. It was inspired by the death of a friend of yours when you were in high school?
Yes. Actually, there's two stories, but that would be the first one. When I was 17, I lost a friend to suicide, and I don't know if it was the day after or sometime the week following his death, his mother invited his friends over to just sit and talk with her and tell stories about him, which I thought was really a wonderful opportunity that we got to sort of all get together before the funeral. And one of the times that I was over there, I happened to see a crime scene cleanup crew going by with a steam cleaner, and they walked by and cleaned his room and then left. And later that day, I was invited into his room by his mother, and she allowed me to take something of his. I wanted a yellow raincoat that he had always worn, but she wanted to keep that. So I settled on a Billabong t-shirt, which I still have to this day. But walking into the room, the carpet was clean, the bed was made, the window that had been shattered from the gunshot had been replaced. It was very eerie that all evidence of the event had been completely erased, and the room seemed almost normal, except he just wasn't there.
Did that bother you?
Yeah, I can't really explain the feeling. You know, some people might think that, you know, not that I would have wished to have found him, but also walking into a room where I know it happened and there was no evidence or no residue or no clues was also probably, for me, just as haunting and just as disturbing as if I had seen something. I feel like, for me, seeing something would have given me closure, but having this piece removed, I didn't get the closure that I needed. And, you know, I saw him a few days later at the funeral home, and it was extremely traumatic for me.
So at what point did you decide that you wanted to start photographing bloodstains and evidence from crime scenes?
The idea came about actually with a former project that I'd worked on in graduate school following graduate school, titled Repository. And I was working in photographing in a hospital. And some of the photographs that I made in the hospital were details of trash or biomedical waste in the histology lab. So organs and tissue, a pathologist would gross them or cut them up and measure them and make slides from them. And then portions or pieces of someone's organ or, you know, a mole that might have been removed from you would end up in this medical waste bin. And I started peering into the bin and became fascinated with the different textures and the color and then these small pieces of skin and made a series of those that go along with the repository project. And so when I finished repository in 2009, I started thinking about what I wanted to work on next. And for anyone that's an artist or has been to graduate school and you graduate and you have this amazing project and then you're left with, what are you going to do next? You know, how to make something better that you will be known for. You know, you don't just want to make something great once in graduate school. And so I began to think about what could I follow repository with. I had received a little bit of success with that project and was thinking about ideas that I didn't get to fully explore with repository because that project was primarily about my experience with cervical cancer. So it focused more on reproductive organs and included self-portraits and interiors at a hospital. But I kept coming back to the medical waste, which was something I had never intended to photograph for that project, but found very fascinating. So that experience or that that exposure in the hospital coupled with my friend's death, I started thinking about, you know, how could I explore that further, in what capacity, you know, how to make that experience translate visually.
These things you photograph, the evidence from crime scenes, things that have been spattered with blood, how do you even get access to them?
I had called several businesses all over the U.S., and most people hung up the phone on me or didn't return my calls or return my emails. And finally, one company, I guess I caught them on a good day. They took the call. They were interested. They invited me to come meet with them, and I believe a week or two later, I arranged to meet with a particular company, showed them what I had done before, told them the story about my friend, and they were very open and willing to work with me, which was a great blessing or, you know, a surprise, because access is half the battle. With most of my projects, it can take months or weeks or even years to get access.
And when you begin working with a particular object, how much do you know about the story behind it, the person who died, the circumstances of their death?
Sometimes I know very little. Sometimes I was left in the warehouse. I would arrive, they would let me in, and then they would leave. And so I would have very little knowledge about the piece. Other times, if the crew was around, I could ask them, I could show them a swatch and say, please tell me the story about this person or what do you know? Occasionally, there would be mail or personal effects in the boxes, and I could not necessarily piece together their story, but know who they were or where they lived. But that information I never reveal, and I never wrote down, so it doesn't exist anywhere. But often, in even sometimes later, I could send the crew an image that I had shot, after I had edited down and selected, made an image of final select. I could send the crew the images and ask them, what they remember about that particular case. They call it cases. It's not people. They don't refer to it as a specific person, but this job or this case.
What does it feel like to be handling that stuff? I mean, what's your attitude while you're doing it? You're touching and photographing the cellular remains of someone mm-hmm. who died violently. A lot of people would find that terribly disturbing.
It is, and I found that as I went further into the project, my threshold or my barrier began to break down. I find the camera provides a nice shield or provides a nice distance between you and what you're photographing. You can sort of hide behind it. But after a year of working on this project, it started to affect me a lot more. Initially, curiosity just took over, and I was able to, dig through these bins, obviously with gloves on and a mask. But I just found it fascinating. I didn't know what the project would look like. I didn't know what direction it was going to take or, what the final result would be. So at the beginning, I was just very, very anxious and curious to, step into something and start working on a new project. And then the longer that I've sat with it, the more that I've thought about it and talked about the work. It is a bit disturbing, but I feel I have my own moral line, and I feel I'm standing right on it. I don't feel that I've stepped over it. I don't feel that I'm...
What do you mean? What would be stepping over it? I mean, what are the moral issues in play for you?
For me, there are artists out there who have dealt with death and the deceased, but have manipulated the physical body, have moved it, they've arranged it in different ways, or they've actually displayed the physical blood splatter in a public space. And for me, I still admire their work. It's just not something that I could personally do.
I guess I'm wondering, do you feel, a sense of reverence? Is there a way in which when you're handling some of these objects, they feel like sacred objects?
Yeah, that's a really great question. An earlier project that I began at the same time as At the Hour of Our Death, because I didn't know if one would pan out, which one would pan out. And I was working on a project called Hereafter, and I was working with remains that had been left at a funeral home. And in Texas, after a certain period of time, I don't remember exactly, remains are then disposed of just in the trash. And another artist that I know of had been using the remains, painting with them actually, and ashes, painting with ashes. And I just wanted to photograph the containers, that the box that the ashes came in and the bag that held the ashes. And when I was working with those ashes and when I'm working with the swatches or textiles for At the Hour of Our Death, yes, I am very reverent. I carefully open the boxes. I don't throw anything around, and I place it back in the box. I am conscious that it is the, as you mentioned, the cellular residue of someone. I don't know who this person is often. I don't know what they look like or, more. I don't know anything more about them than, possibly how they died and, their gender. But I do feel that I need to be respectful in some manner, or you know, carefully handle these objects. And not that anyone's watching me or that anyone would, you know, necessarily care, but that's just a personal thing to me, that I'm being as careful as I can be.
A lot of your projects ask viewers to confront the physicality of death. Why does that matter, do you think?
I think in our society, death is quickly cleaned up, erased. The times that I've been around death, my grandmother, friends, you know, sometimes just, you know, friends of friends and things like that, I find it is very sterile. The body is quickly removed, and the next time you see it, it's at a funeral home. There's no interaction. There's no hand-holding. I'm very fascinated by post-mortem Victorian portraits, and I feel that during that time, people were so much, you know, they were more hands-on with the experience. They prepared the body. The funerals were often in the home, and they had a photographer come and photograph this last moment.
Well, and a lot of us, even as middle-aged adults, still have never seen a dead body.
Exactly, and I find that very bizarre. I know it's the way that this system has been set up. You know, we now go to nursing homes, and doctors take care of us at the end, and no longer are we sort of dying at home. I mean, people do die at home, but often most people aren't dying at home. Hospice care, I'm very interested in, and maybe at some point we'll do a project on that where, you know, the sick and the dying are coming back home to be cared for by a nurse, but also the family members. And a few friends of mine have told me stories about their mothers and fathers dying at home under, you know, working with hospice care nurses, and just the way that they explain sort of those in moments, it's so beautiful to me. One friend actually had a tea party after her mother passed. She invited friends to the room and had a tea party, and another friend bathed her father. And I think that that act of love and that tactile, you know, just being able to, the physicality being more hands-on with the process, I find, you know, much more in line with what I would want to do with my own parents, what I would want for myself. I don't just want to be wrapped up in a bag, you know, pumped full of chemicals and then shoved into the ground. I want someone to want to be with me.
Has this work changed your relationship with your own body, with the fact of your physical existence, do you think? I mean, spending so much time seeing what happens to us physically.
I guess the only thing that it's changed is, I don't know if I'm more aware of how fragile we are. I do think about it a lot, how tomorrow, could be our last day, or today could be the last day. But I don't know beyond that if it's really changed me anyway. Sorry.
I'm just thinking that so often in our culture, you know, we like to pretend that death doesn't happen or that it can be tidy. And here you are asking us to confront, beautifully maybe, but still to confront death and the fact that, you know, we are all, these bodies are going to disintegrate and it sometimes violently or painfully. What kind of reactions do you get from people who see your work?
It runs the whole gamut. A lot of people are moved by the work. I get a lot of people who think I'm exploiting the people who have died. When the film, there was a short film that came out, I think in 2010, 2011, I can't remember, that's horrible. When the film that the Wallys did on my project came out and it hit the internet, I started receiving emails from all types of people, from EMTs, from doctors, from, you know, housewives to the person next door. And primarily all the response was very positive, and one of the EMTs that wrote me, I found it fascinating what he said, that when he's working on a patient and the family is present, he'll often invite them to watch him work on someone to resuscitate them or try and save their life, rather than have them go into another room and then come in only to see the aftermath and not the whole process. For him, he felt that it was more healing or more therapeutic for them to actually be in the presence of him actually working on someone. And then another woman a woman emailed me and said that she had her neighbor had died in front of her, just an old woman sitting in a chair and had died in front of her, but that she felt that was a blessing to be there to witness that, and that she always felt awkward for having that feeling, that for feeling that she was lucky to have witnessed that death. And then, of course, I got one negative email. And the person said that I was a disgrace to photographers and that I should be killed and things like that. So that's sort of the only hate mail I've gotten. But for the most part, the responses have been very positive. And for any number of reasons, people may find them beautiful in their abstract quality and not, want to engage any further with the work. And then other people who do, want to enter in and have a dialogue about death and dying and traces and how sterile, the way that bodies are dealt with in our society today. We have a great conversation and it really opens up their eyes. And, for the most part, I'm hoping that when people look at this work, they begin to think about their own life, their own death, how they want to be prepared, what do they want, and express those wishes to their loved ones.
Hmm. Listening to you talk, I'm struck by how long you've had this interest, this sort of fascination mm-hmm. with the resilience and the eventual end of the physical body. Why do you think this interest has stayed with you for so long?
I'm not sure. I have a few ideas. In no particular order. I come from a military family. And my father went to war, went to the Gulf War, and at a very young age, I think I was 12 or 13, when he came back, he showed me videos that he had gotten from news stations of what he saw and what it was like to be on the ground there. And, whether or not a 13-year-old should see that, I was definitely exposed to it. I knew about war. I knew about how fragile our bodies were. And another instance I can remember is when I was probably 5 or 6. My mother has always been a very giving person, and we were in Tennessee where my grandparents lived at the time. And the church that my grandparents went to, there was a woman there whose daughter had just passed away, and they couldn't afford the funeral. And so my mom stepped in and paid for the funeral. And I remember sitting at the funeral home with my brother, sitting there waiting as my mom filled out all the paperwork and paid for this little girl's funeral for a family that, we had no connection to whatsoever. And I think those two experiences, coupled with the fact that I wanted to be a doctor when I was younger, my grandmother had been a scrub nurse, my grandfather had been a surgeon in Cuba. And so I had grown up thinking that maybe I wanted to be a surgeon. And unfortunately, when I was younger, that interest wasn't sort of nurtured. But, I went on to do other things. And then in graduate school, with my experience with cervical cancer, that sort of interest in the medical realm with illness, with mortality, sort of opened back up and came back to the front. And I started working on projects dealing with those issues.
What does your family think of your work?
My mother would like me to take pictures of dogs and cats and, sunsets. And often, when work is chosen for galleries or museums, she'll ask if it's, is it the one where I'm nude or from a former project? My parents, I think my dad understands my work better than my mother. They both are appreciative and they're both supportive. I'm not sure that they fully understand what I'm doing or why I'm doing it or what it means to me or how passionate I am, but they are supportive. They come to my openings and things like that. And, you know, my mom has now finally started to invite friends or show friends my work and things like that. But it is a challenge.
You have a new baby.
I do.
When he's old enough to see your work for the first time, what do you think you'll say to him about it? How will you explain it?
There is a, I guess the easiest way to talk about it is when I was an undergraduate at the University of Texas at Austin, I attended a lecture by photojournalists, and they were talking about the role of the photographer and the role of the camera, and or the opportunities you can have with a camera. And they said that photographers are like flashlights. They bring light to the darkness. And that's a quote that has always stuck with me. I've loved that idea of revealing something to the world that other people would rather not look at or possibly have looked over or don't know about. And so I guess I would tell my son that the projects that I work on are issues that most people wouldn't want to look at or think about, but that I feel are relevant and important to share with the world, and that I feel like I have a duty as a photographer to explore them if no one else is.
I'm curious, has there ever been a photo you've taken that's just been too much, too powerful, too raw?
Sorry, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it. My older project, Repository, when I was photographing in the hospital, I had never had access to a hospital like this before, and so was photographing anything that I was in front of me. I was very curious. And one day in the histology lab, the technician that I was working with mentioned that an amputation had just occurred, and he pulled the leg out for me to look at. Of course, I was curious and wanted to look, and I photographed it. Mm. And I can't really explain it, but even though that I know the person lived because the leg had been removed, they had diabetes and there was gangrene, and I know that removing their leg was saving their life. Seeing that leg for the first time, seeing the leg was so disturbing, thinking about it having been removed from the body, and aesthetically, it was beautiful. I shot it on this cutting board that they use in the histology lab that under the fluorescent lights turned green after a long exposure. The skin was moist. There was purple and red, and then the white of the bone sticking out of the leg. Aesthetically, it was beautiful and very haunting. And one of the only things that I've ever photographed that made me cry.